Good afternoon, and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen, coming to you from Viroqua, Wisconsin, via WDRT 91.9 FM Community Radio. And we're in the Driftless area, and this is a food show that airs every Saturday at noon and turns into a food show called Digging Deep the last Saturday of every month. And you can go to our website, wdrt.org, and listen to this show today and previous shows. So I'm happy to be talking with a friend I just made recently who's from the Twin Cities, Carl White, and he is an absolute enthusiast and imperfectionist about coffee, and I thought it was fascinating talking with him, and he could answer just about any question I had. I realize there are a number of people in our area who can also talk about coffee, but I really enjoyed talking with Carl, and so we're having this interview over the phone, and he's in his studio, and it turns out he's a recording engineer himself, and does work for commercial, businesses, and does the audio for them, so that's kind of fun to hear. So welcome, Carl. Glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So I guess, I found out he was kind of interested in coffee, and the first question I asked was how do you roast your coffee? And then we got into the before and after of the roasting. So we're just going to kind of go through the whole process of coffee. But Carl, how did you get interested in coffee in the first place? I mean, just not getting some pre-ground coffee and putting in a pot or going to a coffee shop. How did you get started?
Well, it was an experience my wife had, Nora, and she was at a local gathering of some kind, and they served freshly roasted coffee that during that gathering. And the way he did it was he just had the green beans in a frying pan, and I gently roasted them to whatever he thought would be workable. And she just said that the flavor was so amazing that I immediately got intrigued, because I'm a coffee fan too, and was already making espresso on kind of cheap little Krups machines and such. So I was involved already with trying to make really good coffee, but the experience of working with my roasting was a bit of a fitful trajectory at first. I quickly learned that roasting beans on a frying pan is incredibly difficult, and I wouldn't recommend it.
I think that's how I got started with you, because I said, I got a big 5-pound bag of green coffee beans at the Benton Dent down the road, and I want to try roasting my coffee, and that's where we started. And so, well, yeah, so we can start at the beginning, or we can start with the roasting and go backwards, because it really, so many other things go into the final cup of coffee, don't they?
Right. Well, so I'm not sure how this evolved, but I quickly realized that the frying pan method was just not going to be something I wanted to continue. And the next step was using an air popper, a popcorn popper. And that changed everything. That worked great. And I could see it happening, because it's out in the open kind of, and smell it and all that stuff. And so I had complete control over the roast, because I could see and smell. And of course, the amount you can make is quite small. So if you're trying to roast a pound for that week, you'd be sitting out. I was sitting out in the driveway for hours doing it.
And why were you doing it outside?
Why?
Yeah.
It gets smoky.
Okay. Actually. It's not a pleasant smell.
Oh, it's a nice smell.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's just smoky.
Yeah, smoky.
Because
so if you do it in the house, it's definitely gonna get smoky in there.
Uh huh. Yeah, I had heard that even the coffee roasting is usually kept apart from the coffee brewing because it's not the same smell.
Correct.
Yeah, and some people don't really care for the smell of roasting coffee.
Yeah, I'm quite used to it now, but. Mm. But yeah, I can understand that. And interestingly, though, the path forward was I had access to some local green beans through a coffee shop nearby. So it was handy because I could begin right away with green beans. However, I didn't really know the origin or how long they had been sitting around. And something drove me to look further, and I ended up with going with Sweet Maria's, which is a green coffee bean provider based in Oakland, California. And I can't recall the man's name, but he travels the world sourcing boutique coffees from typically small growers. And I thought, well, I definitely want to be involved in this. So I buy exclusively from them, and usually buy about 10 pounds at a time.
How long will that serve you?
Quite a while, several uh-huh. months, I think.
And now green coffee beans will keep.
They do,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Although I have had the experience of not buying from Sweet Maria's and buying elsewhere, and the beans were not good.
Is there a special way of saving them? I mean, refrigerating them or something like that?
I think it's just turnover. You know, I think if they sit around for a while, they actually do, I would think they would lose moisture and you know, all the good things that a good green bean change.
Well, they're still kind of alive in the sense that a bean is alive. I mean, it hasn't,
right.
They haven't been cooked yet.
Right.
And so, yeah, okay. So, yeah, go on.
So the discovery of Sweet Maria's was, I don't recall how I did, but in any event, that changed it all for me because I could order a variety of different types because, he, like I said, he travels the world and gets wherever they grow coffee, he's going to get it. So for a long time, I preferred African beans and also Yemen. Yemen apparently is the origin of the coffee bean. I didn't know that, but would later learn that. So I was very intrigued by that, too. And I do have some Yemen beans at home. They're definitely different. They're smaller. It looks like they grow in kind of a challenged circumstance, I'll say, because they're so little. But in terms of flavor, they're very, very intense. Intense to the point where it's like, I don't know, that's a bit much. So I've come to favor Latin American beans because they're sweeter and they make kind of a lighter espresso. And as I've been telling you, in Viroqua the other day, that the crema I get from that is amazing. The crema is when you draw the shot, it's fully emulsified with the oils and the water such that they're not separated yet. And that's, to me, that's divine. That's like the holy grail of a shot, is to have it 100% crema, and then you just quickly dump it into your froth milk, and there you go.
Wow. And that's the end of the show. No. It's only the tip of the iceberg. I have a million questions. Well, you could get, where do you get your coffee beans? You can get them from, you get them from coffee importers, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. And so maybe your local coffee roaster, might they sell you green coffee beans?
They could.
I mean, they have them. I don't know if they all sell them, but that's where they'd start. And I know that, you know, our coffee grower right down here, I'm a coffee purveyor, Wonder State. I know they do the same thing. They've made friends with the growers around the world, and they visit them, and they like to go to small farms, and they like to know, you know, how the coffee was raised and harvested and treated before it got sold and sent out. And so that's kind of where it begins. You kind of want to go back to the source.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great that you have that resource there.
I know. It would be fun. And my interest in their coffee business was more, you know, about the business. But then I thought, here, you're a person that you roast your coffee every day.
Well, not every day, but...
You roast it for the week?
Yeah, I roast it.
And then you grind it every day?
Correct.
Because grinding has to be done, like... Really, you want freshly roasted beans as much as you can.
Yeah.
And then you want it freshly ground.
Right. And yeah. I grind it, and it goes right into the process of becoming a shot. And I froth first, of course. I make cappuccinos, so one for my wife and one for me. And she likes a little bit more milk, and she uses soy milk. I like a very, very, very small amount of milk, and I use whole milk. And that makes my coffee experience really, really rich. I love it. It's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you questions that I'm interested in, and I'm hoping that my listeners will sort of go along with me in my order. So I was interested in the harvesting of the coffee beans. Now, you've probably, have you actually seen this? Have you ever gotten to go to, a coffee plantation?
I have. It would be fascinating, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, how, coffee beans grow on what, small trees or bushes?
Yeah, they're kind of bushes. I've seen them in Costa Rica.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Pretty modest plants, actually.
And then how do they take the beans off?
Well, they're like a berry.
Uh-huh.
So basically the coffee bean is the seed of that berry.
Okay, so what does a coffee berry look like?
It looks like a cranberry.
Okay, kind of red?
Yeah.
And so then the process of getting the bean out is what?
That probably has a name, but there's a wet process and a dry process, I know. Somehow they have to get the outer layer off. And I'm not really sure how that's done, but wet process and dry process do produce a different type of bean, I guess. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter if you're getting wet or dry process. It's, mm-hmm. it's make a good coffee.
The growers do that themselves?
Is it just done right
on the farm?
Probably, although I think some growers probably hand it off to a processor.
Uh-huh. Is there a fermentation involved?
I'm not sure about that, but it could make sense if it would get the husk off quicker, but I honestly don't know about that.
I don't know either, and I did interview somebody a couple of years ago about cocoa beans, and I might be confusing, chocolate with coffee.
Yep, potentially.
But I know with chocolate there's a fermentation process, but anyway, so then there's different... There's just so many different things to know about coffee, and I'm not sure it's all on a coffee package. When you buy coffee, you might know a location or a, it would say Guatemala, or it might say Sumatra or something like that.
Yes.
That's telling where it was grown.
Yeah.
But that's not really very much information because... I think it really depends on, a little bit I know, the climate, the altitude, a lot more than just the country, right?
it's true.
And I don't know how much you really see on a regular bag of coffee. And then there's so many coffees now that are either flavored or they're really advertising these various notes of flavor to you hardly even really know what the coffee bean actually was or where it was from, but that does matter. What coffee bean, what variety of coffee it is and where it's grown.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know the particular names I'm forgetting right now, but I know one is the Robusta, which I don't use. I'm not sure where that's grown, but I believe they do grow that in India still.
Oh.
But I know that I don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mostly Latin American and African.
Oh, so that would be...
Also Pacific, other ways in Java, places like that.
So these are types of beans.
Well, good question. I think that generally speaking, the Latin American and the Pacific, they're probably the same type of bean.
Mm-hmm.
African ones seem a little different to me, but I don't know if, for example, if the coffee tree originated in Yemen and was propagated elsewhere, who knows what happened to them. They grow coffee on Hawaii, obviously, and surely that was an imported plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think somewhere they're still cultivating coffee plants for sale to make a plantation, but those are things I don't know about. And then what would go into the decision making of what sort of coffee plant you would favor on your plantation? I don't know those things. I kind of wish I did.
Yeah, that's okay. And you can't know everything, but I thought I'd ask you And sure. So when you buy your green coffee beans, you might get more information about the source of them than you would on a just regular
absolutely
package
yeah,
of 8 o'clock coffee from the grocery
yeah,
store.
The Sweet Maria's offerings are quite well described,
mm-hmm.
and so the little label that's on the package will show the origin and then the characteristics of it, and then it goes as far as saying it's good for espresso or not. Now that is interesting to me, because sometimes I just don't agree at all. It's like, well, I just don't care for that kind of espresso.
So you'd want to pay attention to that, depending on the kind of coffee that you want to make in the
end,
brew.
Yeah, I'm comfortable enough now just to go for whatever. I like trying new things anyway, so the roasts that I get now have just been splendid.
Wow.
And mostly because of the Latin American beans. They're very, very cooperative.
So you get a harvest of beans, I suppose it's once a year. And then those beans they're still green when they sell them. I mean, you get them from a farm, they're green beans.
Yeah, they
and,
are. Definitely.
And there's and like you say, they're seeds. And then somebody buys them.
Yep.
And I suppose that what was happening, because you know now we hear about fair trade, is that there was probably cheap labor, cheap product, you know, bought en masse. And roasted in mass and distributed, you know, throughout the world by big coffee companies.
Yep.
And so the fair trade idea is more what you're interested in, which would be, you know, buying more specific coffees and giving, you know, fair price for the work of growing the coffees. I mean, did you pay attention to that?
Oh yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Right.
I'd rather be supporting the simple farmer in this game, and you know, to contrast the larger coffee purveyors out there, like Starbucks, for example, I have no idea how they source their coffee, but I will say I really don't like it at all, and it's kind of a shame that that is a lot of people's coffee experience.
Well, I was wondering if some of these famous coffee companies really are giving you the real experience, which you have really been going after, and how, and could they even?
They could. I think the quantities that they buy are so large, and also, who knows how they were stored? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know enough about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the road I've gone down is it's not really an obsession, but if you would say yes, you have complete control, that's kind of fair. Because if I want to get some from Java, I know I'll do that. Through Sweet Maria's, of course. So I have a lot of trust in them that whatever they offer is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great feeling. I don't have any doubts when I'm buying from them.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's just the whole, you know, if you want to go into it, you go into the labor of the harvesting and the marketing of the coffee throughout the world and who the buyers are and so forth. It must be a huge enterprise. Coffee's just got to be huge.
Oh yeah, massive. Worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that there was a big markup. If you could buy really cheap, you know, huge wholesale amounts of it. And do the processing, and then the idea of Starbucks, you know, actually, I don't know how much Starbucks does, but they have a control of who they buy from and how they process it and roast it and all that stuff, and then having the stores to actually sell it by retail. That's a whole food model, isn't it?
It is.
owning the means of production.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically an industrial concern, if you ask me.
Right. So I don't know when we haven't gotten to the actual brewing of the coffee, but what you have imparted to me is that the best coffee is really very recently roasted.
Yeah.
Recently roasted and very recently ground. So it seems like you really don't know how long coffee's been around in the grocery store, really.
No, you don't.
And then it's on your shelf, you know, and maybe you go to the grocery store, you know, once a month and you stock up on coffee.
Right.
And it's maybe ground already. A lot of people don't grind their own coffee. So, you know, the beans have a life, but then so does the ground coffee. Really a short life as far as really being the best, you know, flavor and all that.
Right.
So we're going to skip over to the roasting, because that's what I was really interested in. Is that coffee for me? I think it's a water and a coffee cup. Thank you, Jim. Jim's my engineer, but he's not going to say anything today, but he's listening. So, yes, I was interested in the roasting, and you said, oh, you wouldn't want to roast in a frying pan. So I had read, oh, you can roast your own green beans in a, you know, cast iron pan. Then I heard, well, there's a lot of there's an aroma, and there's also a lot of chaff.
There is.
And so the idea, and then you told me, gee, it's pretty risky roasting it in a pan because you can just easily burn it. It can burn in a few minutes. It can burn in a few seconds.
Yeah.
And so yeah. That was why you went to the popcorn popper.
Yeah, and that doesn't burn at all. That was a very good method.
And how you mean a popcorn popper like what? Like a little standalone popper?
Yeah, just little plastic ones, you know. They're very simple ones. Mm-hmm. And you don't need a lid on it. They just, the beans stay in there and they rotate. You can hear the process.
Okay, tell me about that hearing.
Right, so the beans will crack once, the first crack happens at a certain stage of heating. I don't know the temperature on that, but it could be ascertained because my machine would tell me, but I never bothered to look. So first crack happens, and then my preference is to stop the roast right at the second crack, which is a smaller, much more rapid crack. That means the beans are really accelerating in heat mass, and they're really close to tipping over to over-roasted.
Mm-hmm. So
set it, get a thing when you roast. You have to attend your machine and listen.
Mm-hmm. So different people want a different amount of roasting depending on what they want for the final product, right?
Yep. Oh, for sure that. And for me, I'm looking for an espresso, a good for espresso roast, which is I wouldn't know how to describe the roast exactly, other than it's just the moment of first crack is where it stops roasting, or second crack, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that's when they stop roasting, and then they go into a cool phase, which you want to have happen pretty, like I'll open the door of the thing and put a fan on it and cool them down quick. And then that means the heating process would stop, and I don't want them to get any hotter after that second crack.
Mm-hmm. And so that would that be a lighter roast? Or this sounds pretty delicate between done and burnt.
I would call it a medium roast.
Uh-huh.
I have come to appreciate that the most. I know you could buy it like an espresso roast or whatever, but that was somebody else's idea. And I don't think it's very good. I think the beans, when they're stopped at the second crack, is the ideal thing for a nice cup of espresso.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a cappuccino, so I'm a little biased based on the flavor.
Oh, right.
It's really impacted by the milk.
Okay. So you also mentioned to me something about seeing the oil on the outside of the bean and how the bean looks when it's roasted.
Right.
So can you describe a little bit?
Yes, to me that means it's been over-roasted, and then what's happening there is that all the moisture of the bean is exiting, unless you see that the oily finish on their hulls. And I just don't think it makes a good cup of coffee because the oils are kind of disappearing from it, you know? So it's basically a dry, dark bean that the water goes through pretty rapidly. And that may suit a lot of people just fine because they like it that way. But it's not good for espresso.
Wow. So I can see there's just a lot of testing and trying. It's very scientific. You know, I mean, you have to do it several times and see what you know what you can how you can duplicate that process and pay attention to what you did.
Right.
Yeah, and what the bean looks like. So a lot of times you can, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you can see these beans and, you know, in bulk beans. And you can see them, some that look oily. And so you're saying that is one that has been more roasted.
Yeah.
And for your taste, you don't really care for that for espresso.
No, it doesn't really work, yeah.
Uh-huh. What would that work for?
I suppose, like, if someone says they like a dark roast brewed coffee, you know, that might be fine for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's a flavor preference at that point, I think.
Right. Well, we'll talk about brewing the coffee in a minute, but once you've got your coffee roasted or you've bought, or you, yeah, once you've got your coffee roasted, oh, roasting. There's another way of roasting, and that's to buy a really expensive machine, right?
Well, the Behmor, it's a Behmor, that's the name of it.
Mm-hmm. Looks like a little toaster oven.
It does, exactly like that. So I just Googled it. It's $480 to get one.
Mm-hmm.
I've had mine for 20 years or so, and it's been great. So I would, if you're going to do it, that's what I would say. Just don't mess around. Just go straight to that thing and start doing it.
So that controls the timing and the temperature.
It does, yeah.
And the
modes. I use a specific one on there with a certain amount of time, and it will vary the roast based on the amount you have, a pound, half pound, or even less. I just do a pound every time.
Right.
And it's really simple. Once you understand the phases, you can get the perfect roast every time.
Mm-hmm. And so that it tosses around the beans or rolls them or something to keep them?
Yeah, it's like a little squirrel cage. The beans go in there, and that rotates, and there's a heating element.
Uh-huh.
And it's that heating element, it comes on, goes off. They're trying to maintain the temperature within the roasting so that it's not being over-roasted, overheated at all. And it's very clever. It works great.
Well, great. I'm talking with Carl White, a friend I made recently who's from the Twin Cities, and we're talking about the art of coffee making, roasting, grinding, buying. And you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson, your host. And we're coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin on WDRT, Dirt Radio, From the Ground Up, 91.9 FM, and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can get this show again if you have missed some of the details and want to hear more. I'm really writing all this stuff down because I can't remember it all, but you can go back and listen to the show again. And other cooking shows from the last several years. We've been on the air for 15 years, I believe, and a lot of those shows are available on the archives. And our last Saturday of the month is now devoted to farming, and it's a show called Digging Deep. So I hope you will tune in again. We air every Saturday at noon, coming from our station here in the Driftless area. So back to Carl. Okay, we got through the roasting, and he finally decided to spend the hundreds of dollars and get the automatic roasting machine and thinks that's well worth it. And if you really love coffee and you want to do it this way, it sounds good. I still like the idea of somehow going outside and over a little wood fire roasting some coffee in a frying pan. But as you say, if you really want it every day, this is going to be kind of tedious and full of mistakes, and
yes, I can confirm that.
I have an idealistic view of it, but anyway, I got it all started with this 5-pound bag of green coffee beans that I got at a discount grocery store. So I am going to now look at the bag and see what I got, see what it tells me, and maybe I will. You said you can look for popcorn popper maybe at a resale shop.
Oh yeah, there should be plenty at the Goodwill.
And so that would be a way for me to start.
Yeah, I would say just go straight to that because it will work.
Uh-huh.
And if you know to listen for the cracks.
Right. And then you use your fan to blow away the chaff, right? Because there is kind of a chaff that forms when you roast the coffee.
Yeah, it's not necessary. The Baymore is, once the roast is done, it goes into a cooling phase. And I just open the door, the chaff flies out of there, and I put a fan on just to cool it faster. You don't have to do that, though.
Okay. Okay, so now from the roaster, you have a whole bean that is now no longer green. It's brown.
Brown, yes.
And your bean would be kind of dry looking. It would be matte color. It would not be shiny. That's what you're aiming for.
Yeah, it's shiny as in it doesn't have like an obvious coating of oil on it.
Right. And then what you're going to do with those beans? They're cooled off.
Yep.
And then what do you do?
Well, it just goes into a mason jar and or directly to my grinder, which that's a whole other thing, the apparatus that you use. I have recommendations for it, of course.
Yes. So if you just want to keep your beans for a few days, you put them right into a jar with a lid on it?
Yeah, assuming that the grinder may still have some from the last batch. I sometimes choose to exhaust that and then start completely fresh with the new bean if I'm curious as to what the flavor profile would be. Or sometimes there might be like an inch or so in the bottom of my grinder and I'll just pour what I can in that and then put the others aside till later.
Mm-hmm. Because so I've heard something about off-gassing. When does that happen?
Oh, it does, immediately. So after a week's time, my beans, I can tell a difference. They're outgassing even with the lid on in their container, and the flavor changes.
Oh.
Even in that short amount of time. So it's nice, for me anyway, to roast weekly because you've got that nice, fresh batch. And it will basically hold its own for a week, in my opinion.
So outgassing is kind of as the flavor is dissipating.
It is.
I see. Okay. So that's why you want fresh. And then I start thinking, you go to a coffee place that's, maybe a drive-in place. There's quite a few drive-in coffee places now. And you wonder, now I wonder how fresh their coffee was.
Yeah. I mean, how could you know?
But that would be the idea. Is like we have the best coffee because it's fresh and it's fresh ground and all that stuff.
Right.
Right.
Or freshly roasted.
Freshly roasted. Yeah.
If it's a roaster in town, then you're gonna get the freshest beans probably.
Mm-hmm. So the grinding. I know that there's different kinds of grinders that you can use. The machines.
Yep.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I had a very specific need, and that was it only could be a certain height to get below my kitchen cabinet. So that's quite a restriction. And a lot of the popular ones are just big. So thankfully, there's this Spanish manufacturer called Escaso, Escaso. And their little grinder fits perfectly underneath my countertop or my cabinets on my countertop.
Mm-hmm.
And then right next to it is the Rancilio Silva, which is a hugely popular machine. Again, I've had that for 20 years.
And that's the brewing machine.
Yes, that's the brewing machine. So those two things needed to sit underneath my cupboards, and that largely dictated what they were.
But you were definitely, I've understood that there's a blade grinder and a burr grinder.
Yeah, the blade grinder, I don't know anything. Oh, well, you could say... a blade grinder would be like a little handheld grinder that I have a few of those. That would be a blade grinder, like the old Krebs thing, right? Mm-hmm. But the Escaso does have a burr, and I don't know exactly what that means, burr grinder, but you look at the parts that are doing the grinding, and I suppose they call those burrs? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not blades. They're... meant to grind, so they look like sort of gears, I guess.
Yes, I know. I'm kind of thinking like the grain grinders that you get. Those are the burrs. They're two sort of gear-looking wheels that run against each other.
Yeah.
And that must give some kind of different effect to the ground coffee.
Yes. So they're... I will say the Scazzo grinder is very difficult to set because it doesn't have any indicator as to where you are. I mean, it's really hard.
Sort of so more or less, but it, you don't.
Yeah, once you get it, don't touch it. there are times when I have to adjust it a little bit based on origin. Kind of stick with a certain region, as I say, again, Latin America seems to be winning this one. But there are times when I have to adjust the grind. If the shot is coming out too slowly, for example, then you have to loosen the grind a bit.
Oh, I see. But when you're doing an espresso grind, it's pretty fine, right?
It is, but it's not powder.
It's still not powder. Okay.
Still has a I'll just say an aggregate quality, but extremely fine. And my daughter gave me a little tool. It's like a little handheld thing with four tiny rods that will
almost like needles.
Yes, like needles. Once you take the ground coffee off the grinder, you poke it with this thing, and that I think what it does is it gets rid of any clumps that might affect flow of coffee through it.
I see.
And then there's also a tamper thing that she gave to me that you tamp the shot before you put it into the brew head. And with those two little tools, you get even more precision for the shots. So the shots lately have been just spot on perfect. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to see this. I mean, I'm able to even ask some of these questions because I got to see this a few days ago when you showed me from the. Let's see, where were we starting? We were starting from. You ground it, and then I watched you pack it into your. You put your little needle poker thing in there,
yeah.
and then you packed it in, kind of gently but firmly.
Yeah, that tamper thing is a spring-loaded thing. Mm-hmm. It does what it does with the pressure you apply, and it works great. I didn't know how I survived without it.
Well, and I bought. For my son and myself, one of the cheaper ends of the espresso maker, and you know, it was under $100. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, you can spend way more than that on a coffee maker.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Since mine's 20 years old, it didn't seem expensive.
And what was that called? The Rens?
Rensilio Silvia. I'm looking it up now. Yeah, it's around,
400?
The Seattle Coffee Gear has one at $9.95. So.
Oh, dear. Oh, well.
But, you know, the thing is going to last
for
as long as you do, probably. What's beautiful about them, I think, is that there's no integrated circuits within. It's just like an old car, just switches. And that is a big deal, I think, because it just has a job, it does it great, and you're not going to have a failing integrated circuit.
So,
highly recommend the thing.
Yes, so you're probably looking at a used one maybe then, if you can.
Yeah, I did. So I got each of my kids have the same kit that I have. And I just eBayed each one. They got the same grinders, a little bit more updated though, and the same machines that I have. So, because I got used to making coffee at home, and I thought, well, it probably would be a smart strategy to get them the same setups because then they would not spend so much money at coffee places and then come back and ask me for money.
So what your kids have, and this is what we need at home, you need a roasting mechanism, and then you need a grinding mechanism, and then you need a brewing.
Right. Although they don't do the roasting.
They don't do the roasting.
No.
Okay.
No. So I'll still roast for my daughter since she's local to me, but my son in Eau Claire, actually, he has to buy from a local roaster.
I see. And you can find a roaster where you could get it, like, daily? You could get fresh, really, really fresh roasted coffee.
I think so, yeah. The fresher it is, the better it is.
How interesting. I'm going to start paying more attention to this around here.
Yeah.
See what you can get. So now you've put your tamped coffee into your little container and you put it in the machine, and that is going to, you call it, what do you call it? You call it a, no, what's the actual experience of making that? There's a word you use.
Like making the shot.
And making the shot. So what's actually happening? Is it high pressure, high temperature? What is it?
It is high pressure. So the way the Rancilio works is it has a steam component that will allow you to froth milk, and that's very aggressive. It's very, very powerful. And if so, what I do is froth the milk first, set that aside, and then blow off yet more steam before I draw the shot, because if there's too much steam behind it, you can sometimes disturb the coffee grounds themselves in the machine if blast steam in there, and it's actually a problem. Doesn't make a good shot at that point. So mm-hmm. there's this procedure where you froth the milk, blow off some steam to where it's kind of a gentle sort of outlet of steam, and then run the shot.
Mm-hmm.
It works best.
Mm-hmm. So I got to see this shot, and I got to see the crema, which I had never known about before. I'm not really a coffee aficionado, but this just fascinates me. But the crema, it's like this beautiful light brown foam, and
yeah.
You said it should really penetrate the whole shot.
Yeah, that's the magic. When the whole shot is crema, you're like, oh my, I did it.
Wow. And then you pour it into a little teeny tiny cup?
Yeah, it just goes into a tiny mason jar. And what's nice about that is I know exactly where I want to stop the shot. Because every day it's the same thing. And with the mason jar, the little mason jar, it seems to be the perfect amount, right up to the first line of the jar. And then I stop the shot there and pour it in the already frothed milk, and it's good to go.
Mm-hmm. So that is called, when you put the frothed milk into the coffee, what is that called?
The other way around. So I froth the milk first.
Yeah.
And then put the shot into the frothed milk.
Oh, into the milk.
Yeah, and I think that's the way that most of the baristas do it, too, to make those fancy designs, which I can't do. I don't know how to make those designs to put on the foam. I have much respect for that technique. I don't know how they do it.
Oh, they're really pretty. But so then you just drink that right away. Are you allowed to add sugar, or is that forbidden?
Well, I don't, but you sure could.
So, that is called a cappuccino?
Yeah, a little. And in my case, it's a very dry cappuccino. Very dry, amount of milk.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I prefer.
So, do you know what these other types, when you have a latte or something, what is the difference between these?
Well, a latte is mostly milk. And years ago, Nora and I knew a guy that was consulting Starbucks or something, I don't know why, and they recognize that what they're really selling is coffee-flavored milk.
Oh.
Yeah, and that kind of changes your opinion. It's like, oh, I never really thought about that, but I can kind of see that now. So a latte is mostly milk, and that suits a lot of people. But it's a lot of milk if you think about it. Like a large latte is, that's a tremendous amount of milk.
And is that also frothed?
Not. I think it's heated, but I don't think it would be frothed.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of it.
Okay. And so do you just have one cup, or do you have a cup, several cups during the day, or how do you drink your coffee?
Yeah, Monday through Friday, just one, because it's kind of like that gets me to the door. I'll have two on the weekends. But I don't want any more than that because you'll get a little acid reflux maybe, or jittery. There's a limit.
Well, I've been getting Americano.
Yes.
And I understand that that is actually espresso with boiling water added.
Correct. Yeah, those are tasty.
So now maybe I should try espresso just to see, but that would be much more intense.
Yeah, a straight shot of espresso is quite intense. Yeah.
Yeah. But now I'm asking you to go over into different ways of brewing coffee. But what is, say, a pour over coffee? There's no pressure. In fact, it's the opposite of pressure.
Right. Yeah, I used to do that before I got fully into the espresso making.
And so, what's the difference in the way it's handling the, your grind and the, actual finished product?
Fair question, because I think the ground is, generally speaking, for pour through,
a little coarser.
Much more coarse, because if it's too fine, it won't drain through very quickly and can impart, maybe it'll get too bitter after that. It's been so long since I've done that method.
Then a pour over coffee is, probably similar to a French press. A French press, you're letting the coffee just sit in the water for a certain, a minute or something, and then you're pressing it.
Right.
But no high pressure, like an espresso.
Not quite the amount of pressure behind it.
Yeah. Very, just so interesting how many different choices you have and how many different preferences people have. I guess you just keep trying until you find what you like.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm talking with Carl White. He is a new friend of mine who lives in the Twin Cities, and he loves making espresso coffee and roasting his own beans and doing his own grinding and everything. So we've kind of been going through the whole process of making your own coffee from scratch. And I just thought that would be fun for us to talk about. So we have gotten to different methods of brewing, and now I wanted to maybe talk about the whole question of organic and fair trade and what that means.
Yeah, certainly preferred if you can get organic, but it's rare, to be honest. I don't think the offerings from Sweet Maria's are ever.
It's not even a choice.
Yeah, uh-huh. But sure, they're out there.
But what would they be using in the growth of coffee that wouldn't be organic?
I don't know.
No.
Maybe I don't want to know.
But I mean, that's a lot of things are on packages, kind of because it's just in. So they'll say something is low cholesterol, or now it's no trans fats, or now it's and you don't admit, did they ever have trans fats? just putting things on labels. But I mean, saying organic when something maybe that's not important. I don't know. The other thing I think in the whole idea of fair trade is giving fair payment to the people who are growing the coffee farms, for one thing.
Yep, for sure.
The laborers and so forth, and that their working conditions are decent and so forth, because that can be really abused in not only the food industry, but certainly in the food industry.
Right.
Somebody capitalism seems to be based on somebody's getting screwed. Excuse me. Somewhere along the line, there's a little cost cutting.
Yes, I agree on that.
I loved Rudolf Steiner's idea about making a profit. He said, of course, when you are having a business, you have to make a profit so you can stay in business.
Right, that is true.
And so we're not against making a profit, but how do you make the profit is really important. He said, let's see, have you treated your employees fairly? Are they paid decently? Are you treating your suppliers well and not, copping out on them and undercutting them by going to some other supplier? maybe not paying your employees well? Overcharging your customers. How are you making the profit? And you should really examine that at least yearly about how, and then doing the moral thing and making a profit that's really fair and really treats everyone in every step of the business in a fair way.
Yes, and I have great confidence in Maria's and the fact that he does travel the world, he meets all the growers, and it's all small scale.
Right. That really helps, doesn't it?
I trust I trust that model, and I'm very happy with it too.
Mm-hmm. So, you have any other comments about coffee?
Well,
recommendations for people to try and to be paid?
I think what I would say is, if you go down the roasting road and then the brewing and all of that stuff, just get good machines. I will share the garbage heap of little Krupp style machines. I went through like five or something before I finally said, okay, enough of this. I'm going to get a proper machine.
For the brewing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the grinder, because I knew that the little handheld grinders can, you know, you can kind of get there, but it's going to be different every day. And I wanted consistency, so I got those two machines, the Escazo and the Rancilio. And I'm so happy with them. They're just perfect for me.
Oh, that's great. Well, I got a burr grinder for my son one Christmas, because we were trying to get into, you know, the finer aspects of coffee making. And it was a hand grinder. And immediately took a power drill and set it up so that he could power it up, because it took forever to grind it by hand.
It's a drill. That's an interesting idea. Hook that up somehow.
Yeah, so he motorized it pretty quickly. But I haven't gotten back to a burr grinder. I just buy those cheap little grinders, usually at Goodwill, and get a couple of them, and one burns out, and you get another one. But those are blade grinders. And so I haven't even really gotten into doing the right kind of grind. So these are all things to pay attention to if you want the really perfect cup of coffee, right?
Right. I bet you're kind of used to what you do every day, and if that's good, then fine. I feel like if you wanted to go to the different level, then that financial commitment, first of all, is probably a lot for most people. And what I would say on that is, like, it's worth it. 20 years later, they're both working flawlessly, and I don't see them conking out ever, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth the investment to get those good machines.
Yes, when I was looking at yours, they look really, I mean, they look like antiques. I mean, they really look old.
They still look the same, though. Even
they're not plastic, for one thing.
A brand new one looks exactly like the one I have.
Right.
With a few little here and there, but I don't know why. There's a pro model that's, you know, $2,100, and I don't know what that could possibly bring to people, but it looks like it has a temperature gauge and all of that stuff, and those are things I just don't worry about. Some people do, and that's great, but...
Well, maybe they want to do that if they really want to get themselves into a little business. I mean, I know several people who've started the coffee grinding, you know, roasting and grinding business. They probably want to invest in a totally reliable machine.
Yeah, so I can just sort of expound on that a little bit. I had my hairdresser I've been going to for 30-some years, and so I got him hooked up on this coffee stuff. And he's much more technical and scientific about it than
mm-hmm.
I am. And so he looks at the temperature and the pressure and stuff, and he uses different machines than I do. And he said, for me, it's science. And for you, it's art. And he's right. It's for me, and I don't really want to mess with the science part, to be honest.
Well, you want to get, I guess, you're scientific up to a point where you figured out what works to make you really love the coffee, and that's the art. I mean, it's your taste, it's your personal taste. That was another thing about temperature. We didn't really talk about that, but in your machine, it's kind of will you set the temperature, or is that an automatic for you?
It's whatever the machine is doing, and there are machines available, same ones that have a temperature gauge, and that might be useful for somebody, but I've been doing it for so long without worrying about that
mm-hmm.
I don't think it would make change the way I do it, to be honest, even just knowing what the temperature was.
Mm-hmm. So, because I've heard things like, don't pour boiling water onto your coffee. It should be somewhat under a certain temperature, like 100 degrees or something like that.
I've heard that too, although I doubt that it's, I'm sure people pour boiling water on their grounds all the time.
Right. Well, I guess a aficionado would know the difference. Well, it's just been a joy to talk with you, Carl. I've been talking with Carl White from St. Paul. We've been on the phone, and he's been talking about his hobby, which he just loves, and he has really perfected the way he does his espresso coffee. And we've talked about all kinds of aspects of the coffee making process, and I hope you've enjoyed this show. I'm Philothea Beeson. You've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen, and we're on every Saturday at noon, coming from WDRT 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.